I like that slide. The more explicit the instructions, the easier I have of following them. So great to have something to tell me. It's your time to get up, your time to speak. It is good to be here. I only want to take a minute because I don't want to steal too much time from the lesson itself, but a great joy to be able to be here. As Charlie mentioned, they've come to some of our seminars, retreats that we do, and we've been thrilled to have them there. Actually, your son was there for one as well, I know, in Florida. Enjoyed having him there as well. Jeremy and Anna came to the last one that we had in Branson, and apparently we didn't solve everything for them because they've already signed up for the next one in Branson. But always great to be able to come and to see some of the people that you know from other situations. And then I was here. I forgot to look up the year, but it was somewhere back around 2011 or 2012, something like that, when I was here at this congregation. And we did what I normally do is the first series of lessons dealing with marriage relationships. And was asked to come back, and I really appreciate that, not only getting to see those people, but others. Judy's not with me. I truly wish that she was. I know some of you wish that she was. She clearly is the half of this equation that is most enjoyable probably to be around, but she has family here, which I can say in about every congregation I preach in Alabama. Her father is the youngest of 11, and I was just in Florence, and I just made that statement. I just said, probably got relatives here too. And I mentioned J.D. Evans' name, and there was somebody sitting in one of the pews and leaned over to my son, who was also visiting, and said, J.D. Evans? Yeah, we're related to J.D. Evans. And so we meet people related all over the place, some that we didn't even know that happened. I've watched Michael Crane when he was little and growing up, good friends with our oldest son, Matthew. They played ball together, got to know his family very well, and it wasn't until well after he was married that Judy was at her dad's house one night, and she happened to mention Mike and his wife, Christy, and her maiden name, Mullinax. And J.D. says, Mullinax? We're related to some Mullinaxes. And so, as it turns out, they're related as well. So it just the branch just keeps going farther and farther. I was talking to Clark last evening when we were here, and he said that's why they've got family members that have been advised, before you get married, make sure you go out of county. Because you're probably related to everybody in the county. You can't marry them. Certainly is the case with some. And great to be in their home. They have also come. 50 years marriage and came to our seminar last year in Branson. Great to have them there. Great to share in their home as well. So thankful to be here, and to the shepherds of this congregation for asking me to come. I don't know that there's any subject that is any more important. Obviously, everything God talks about is important, but in our culture and the way things work, marriage is as critically important probably as any other thing that we talk about from the scriptures. And so we're talking about the idea of wedding vows and what those vows mean. And I'm basing these lessons on vows that I made, but there's similar statements made in nearly every wedding. And we talked about this morning in class the concept of lawfully wedded. And I would tell you, we need to emblazon that one in our minds. The concept of covenant, the concept that exists in Ephesians chapter 5 when Paul is talking to those brethren, and he's talking about husbands loving your wives and the type of love that is. And we'll talk about that a little bit more if the Lord permits later in the week. And then he talks about wives submitting to their husbands and respecting their husbands. And he, right toward the end of all that he's talking about, says, but this is a mystery. I'm not even talking about marriage. He said, I'm talking about Christ and his church. That's why it is critically important, because as we pointed out in the class, our marriages are a picture of Christ and the church. That's what he intends that they be. And we're going to be the ones that determine what kind of picture that is. He said, all these things I taught you are true. That's the way you should treat your husband and your wife. He says, nevertheless, he says, still do all the things I told you. But the mystery was that he was really talking about the relationship of Jesus and his church. So after I made the statement, or was asked to make the statement, Mark, do you take Judy to be your lawfully wedded wife? The very next thing that the preacher said was, to have and to hold. What does that mean? What's the significance of that? What is it that God wants me to understand in regards to the promise that I've made? Because these are the promises, these are the vows that I made. I think it's Newton's third law of motion that says for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Marriage is that way. The way I behave, though God expects my wife to behave a certain way regardless of how I behave, and we talked about that in class, things that I do, things that I say are going to bring about certain reactions normally. And so how we behave and how we perceive this relationship once it has started is a big factor in the picture that we are painting for other people. So as we think about that, I love this quote. Some young kids were asked, give your description of marriage. And so they would give different descriptions, things that they understood. And they, like an art link letter form. It wasn't art link letters kids that were saying this, but a much more modern version of that. And they said some great things. I mean, things that, like in our romance lesson that we'll talk about later in the week, that good for men to remember. It says, you should tell your wife how beautiful she is, even if she looks like a truck. Well, it may not be the way you want to put it to your wife, but they said some interesting things. And I love what this one kid responded, because they were talking about different aspects of marriage, and this young boy, he's only like 11, 10 or 11. And he said, Christians can have only one wife. This is called monotony. Well, I don't know. It may be, but that's not the word he really was looking for, I don't think, there. So how do we have a marriage that is not that way? I mean, because what does God expect? And men, I would tell you, some of these lessons, I don't think men fail more than women. Let me just say that on the front. All of our marriage lessons used to be directed almost as if men would just do what they were supposed to do, it would all work out. But I'm convinced now that there are an equal amount on both sides of the equation that are failing to be the kind of people God expects them to be in the relationship. And that causes problems. But I would tell you that as we think in terms of the relationship, I am going to be the lead in that relationship. And God expects me to be the lead in that relationship. And so how is it that I create the relationship that God would have us to have? Because men wrestle with the idea of it kind of culminating when we get married. And that's what this lesson is about. What does it mean to have and to hold? What happens after marriage? What is it that God is looking for? What is it that is included in the scriptures that would help us to understand that? Because he gives us some direction when he says, as we indicated, the idea of leaving your father and mother. But then he says in the Old King James, it says that you are to cleave to your wife. Now that's been changed since then, because that's one of those strange words. It has two exactly opposite meanings. You know, there aren't a lot of words that are that way, but it means exactly opposite of itself. Cleave might mean, like the butcher does, when he takes out a piece of meat and pulls out a cleaver, it may mean to divide or to separate asunder. But that's obviously not what God is talking about. He used that word in the Old King James, it was translated cleave, because the other side of that meaning kept the idea of not only this cutting blow, not only the dividing of, but also to adhere closely, to stick to. And that's what we're told. In Genesis chapter 2, in verse 24, he says, you're going to leave one relationship. And that's critical. I even have, when I perform wedding ceremonies, I even have the bride and groom turn and face the parents. And I make a statement similar to this. In other words, if I was marrying one of the couples that I married recently, I would say, Taryn, face your parents. And I would say, Taryn, you will no longer primarily be the daughter of these two people. You'll still be their daughter, but you will no longer primarily be their daughter. You will primarily be the husband of Mason. And I tell her parents, Taryn will no longer primarily be your daughter. Because it's important for parents to understand the leaving process too. She'll no longer be your daughter. She will primarily be the wife of Mason. And I'll do the same thing with Mason. Because it's important to recognize that I have to leave one relationship. All three of our sons are still our sons, but not primarily. Their primary relationship on earth, their primary relationship obviously is with God, but their primary relationship on earth is with their wife. That's primary. And their secondary relationship on earth is with their children. We can't possibly come into the equation, and we'll see that in one of the other lessons. We can't come into the equation until at least third. We need to have an understanding of the leave process. But then he says, once you leave, what does it mean to have and to hold, to cling to be joined to receive as your own, in other words, to have. I receive Judy as my own to retain her, to take responsibility, to hold on to. That's the principle that is in Genesis chapter 2. That there is a principle that says leaving is critical. And we understand that, do we not? You ever known anybody where the marriage struggled because either child couldn't leave parent or parent couldn't let go of child? God understood what he was talking about when he says, you've got to understand what relationship takes priority. That can cause problems. There's no question about that. Both need to understand that. But he says, equally important is understanding the second half of that statement. You're leaving this relationship, but you are to cling to, that you are to be joined to, that you are to hold fast to. That's the way some of the other versions read in regards to this. Shall leave father and mother, cleave to his wife, or as the ESV says, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife. What does that mean to you? How do you put that in practical terms? That I am to hold fast to my wife. What is it that God is asking me to do? When I look at the other passages in 1 Peter chapter 3, where he gives a husband direction as to how he should behave in a marriage. Or in Ephesians 5, and he gives a husband direction as to how he should behave. Or the statement that I love that comes out of Colossians, when Paul writes to them, he says, this is the way you behave. He says, as is fitting. I love that particular description. As is fitting. He says, this is just the way a husband is supposed to be. This is the way a wife is supposed to be. You treat each other the way that belongs to the role that you are filling. He says, understand that. Well, what does that mean? Well, here's the idea. That word carries the idea in the original of pursuing something with great energy. To cling to something zealously. I like both of those descriptions. That I am to hold on to my wife. That's not talking about that I am to become the jealous husband and lock her up and not let her have any life. He's saying, but I am to hold on to her as she is incredibly the most valuable thing that God has given me on this earth. Because that's what it is. She is a gift. And he talks about that. Adam talked about that. Remember when God met him in the garden? Of course, Adam talked about it not in the greatest of terms. Adam said, I'm only in this predicament I'm in because of the woman you gave me. Almost as if it was God's fault. But he did understand it was a gift from God. And she's a gift to me. In 1 Peter chapter 3, as Peter is writing and he's talking to husbands, he says, honor your wives. That's a tremendous word. That's just a great word in and of itself. It carries the idea of value. It carries the idea of being weighty. Husbands, be very cautious how you use that particular definition when you're using that word. Weighty in the sense of, remember those scales and kind of like the scales of justice sometimes are displayed with. You've got it's kind of like a little plate or a bowl over here, and there's another one over here, and there's a balancing arm. And what you do is you'd put something in this side, and you had to put sufficient gold or money or whatever else it was in this side, if you put something over here, to where it balanced out. So this amount of gold equaled this amount of product. That was the idea of that. And so it was weighty. It's saying, husbands, understand, here's the problem when you view your wife, or here's what you need to view your wife as. He says, again, be cautious, but when you put your wife on the scale, he says it does this. There's no amount of gold or anything else you can put on this side that equals what your wife is worth. That's what he's saying. Honor her. Value her greatly. Husbands, hold on. This is the most precious gift on earth that you'll ever receive. Obviously, Christ is the most precious gift we've ever received. But the most precious gift on earth is the spouse that we have. He says, this is an incredible gift that God has given you, whether husband or wife. He says, you need to hold on tightly to that, understanding the incredible value of that. We understand the nature of that, do we not? If your house is burning, what matters to you first? Hurricane Harvey just hit in Texas. Lot of damage. Seen a lot of videos from people after they're going into these areas that were just ravaged by incredible winds, structures torn down. Or I remember when the tornado hit Joplin, Missouri, killed 200 and some people while we were living in Kansas City. Incredible. You didn't hear anybody standing outside when a reporter was there and saying, "I can't find my drill, my cordless drill. Have you seen my cordless drill?" Why? Because nobody cared. They talked about people first, because people matter to them. And you understand that. That was a relationship. And you may have decreasing value of other things, but we understand some things. If my house is burning, what's the first thing you're going to make sure? I'm going to make sure that I get everybody out that I can. Isn't that what you would do? Because there's great value. He says, understand the incredible value, husbands, that your wife has to you, and treat her that way. And so what we're going to look at this, and the idea of marriage is not the goal, but rather it is the starting point. And that's, we sometimes as men wrestle with that. We pursue a woman until we get married and we somehow relax a little bit. Women may do the same thing, but less likely so, because one of the things you'll find out is men are very task-oriented, and God created us that way. That's not a fault. God created us very task-oriented, created women very relationship-oriented. That's why he gives different commands, I think, in Ephesians 5. Husbands are told something different than wives are told. Why? Because we have different needs. Husbands are different than wives, and God created us that way. But men are task-related or oriented. How do you know that? Bump into a guy on the street, and if you ask him, you bump into him for the first time, somebody introduces you. What's the first question men ask? "Hey, how many kids do you have?" I don't know if I've ever asked anybody that. I mean, at least not till way further down the conversation. I ask him, "What do you do?" Isn't that the nature of men's conversation? What do you do? We want to talk about work and all those things. But women don't do that. Women bump into each other. That's what they want to know. You know, are you married? Do you have children? Do you have grandchildren? They're relationship oriented. And so men are going to be challenged sometimes because we kind of stop at the wedding. But I think Genesis chapter 2 is talking about the idea of a pursuit of your wife. A pursuit of your spouse. What it means to pursue somebody with all of your energy. And the thing that's going to make that happen is not chemistry. The thing that's going to make that happen is work. And I think that's what Genesis chapter 2 is talking about. Husbands, wives, how hard are we working to maintain that relationship? How is it that I am putting forth effort every single day to make that relationship stronger? There's an automatic assumption sometimes that marriage is just going to work. And I know that assumption is there because when I do premarital counseling, you talk to couples and they don't anticipate. When I had the lesson on conflict resolution, most couples that I talk to act as if they're not sure what you're talking about. Why? Because they're living in infatuation and they haven't had any significant conflict. But when you help them to understand, I'm telling you, the way you feel about each other right now will not always be the same. We understand that, don't we? Because love is deeper than emotion. Would you agree with that? We have three sons. Love all three of them dearly. Never stopped loving any of the three of them, I don't believe. Loved all of them all the days that they have been our sons. But there were days I came pretty close to taking them out. I wasn't as fond of them on that particular day. Have you ever been there? As you're raising your child? Love that child dearly. Don't like them a bit right now. Isn't that the way we feel sometimes? Why? Because one is an emotion, one is not. God says, husbands, love your wives. Sacrificially, love your wives. He gave himself for the church. And so he's saying, this is a pursuit of somebody. When you think about the sacrifice Jesus made for his church, and if I were to ask you, why did Jesus come to earth? Different things may pop into your mind. Different statements from Scripture. But one of them would probably eventually for sure be, Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Not just to save them. He came in pursuit of them first. Isn't that an interesting statement about Jesus? He didn't come just to save the lost. He came to look for them, to find them, to go talk to them. That's why he walked the roads that he did and went to the crowds that he went to. He was seeking out the lost. He says, sacrificially, giving up his own time. When he went to the woman at the well, and you have that whole discussion in John chapter 4. Remember how that starts? Jesus went, the disciples are going to buy food. I got a whole sermon called Thank God the Disciples Were at Lunch. They would have never talked to this woman. They wouldn't have spoken to her. They were amazed when they came back and he was speaking to her. But you remember what it says of Jesus? When he got there, he sat down. Why? Because he was worn out. But he came to seek the lost. And when somebody came up to the well, Jesus immediately left his weariness behind so he could seek the lost, so he could provide to her an opportunity for salvation. He was willing to put forth the effort. He says that's what we have to do in marriage. We may not feel a certain way today, but we need to work on our relationship every single day. One of the best words of advice I got early on was somebody saying, you need to act your way into a different way of feeling, not feel your way into a different way of acting. And I agree with that 100%. There are sometimes you don't feel like doing what you're supposed to be doing in marriage. But God says, you keep doing it. You pursue your spouse with all your energy. I did like one man's quote. It was more in line with what it should be rather than the boy who kind of got the quote wrong on the monotony. But he did say, the problem with marriage is the same as with all life. It is so daily. That's a good thought, isn't it? Because I'm telling you, there's sometimes, just because it is 24/7, 365 days a year, that there are times when you don't put forth as much effort as you do at other times, even though you know you should. It becomes so daily. Things start repeating themselves. There's a comfort level that comes up. And so sometimes we're not as pursuing as hard. Remember what Paul told the Galatians? He said, don't grow weary in well-doing. Chapter 6, verse 9. When you're doing what's right, he says, don't grow tired. Why that advice? Do you ever just read the scriptures and say, I wonder why Paul said that? I wonder why Jesus said that? I have to believe Paul said what he said in Galatians chapter 6 when he's writing to those people because there were people that were growing tired while they were doing what was right. He's saying, don't do that. There's a danger there, is there not? For all of us, is there not a danger of growing lax in our Christianity? Would you agree with that? There's a danger of growing lax, that we stop putting forth as much effort in our Christianity. You think that doesn't happen in marriage? Yeah, we can grow lax. And he's saying, don't grow weary in well-doing. It is work involved with marriage. We need to be willing to put forth the work. The passage that was read out of Isaiah, one of my absolute favorite passages in the Bible, Isaiah chapter 40. But you get down to verse 30. And one of the things he says even before that, he says, why do you think your way is hidden from God? Do you not understand who God is? I mean, his mind is unsearchable. But then he also says, he never grows weary. God never grows weary. Are you thankful for that? Because I'm telling you, I've lived times in my life where I would have to think, if it wasn't God, if it was man I was depending on, at some point, man would have said, you know what, I'm tired of this. I'm just done. But God doesn't grow weary. He continues to pursue. And he says, that's what we need to do. And you get a little bit further down that chapter and you get to verse 31. He says, if we'll just trust God, that he's given us the right advice, that he's got the right ideas for us, that his thoughts are what we need to think. He says, those that wait on the Lord, what? He says, mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not grow weary. They shall walk and not faint. He says, if you'll just keep doing what God said to do. So when do I get to stop sacrificing for my wife? Never. As long as we're married. I'm constantly looking. When do I get to stop nourishing and cherishing her, as we'll talk about a little bit later in the week? I don't get that option. He's saying, what I have done is I made a promise to have and to hold, to be a person who is clinging to in full pursuit zealously. So how hard are you working on your marriage every single day? The writer of Proverbs says in chapter 4, he says, keep your eyes on the path. Stay focused. so that you understand where you're supposed to be going. How easy is it to get diverted from what we're supposed to be doing? We talk about that, if the Lord wills, tonight, as marriage ever changes. How different is that? When I first got married, it was 2 years before we had our first son. If I had chosen to, I didn't always, but if I had chosen to, I could have devoted absolute total attention to Judy at that stage of my life. Then we had a son. I could not, even if I wanted to, devote absolute attention to Judy because there's somebody else in the equation. We understand that. Some distractions are good and natural, but some distractions come a lot of other ways. But focus is critical. Am I focused and understand every single day that I need to always see the goal of a marriage? How am I going to help God be glorified more today by the way I behave as a husband or the way I behave as a wife? Hebrews chapter 12 says what of Jesus? He says, life is this race, he's telling us. He tells us, let us run with endurance this race. Isn't that what he says? And he says, set aside the things that are slowing you down. And he says, and do what? Look at Jesus, he said. Keep your focus on Jesus. Why? Because Jesus kept his focus on God. That's what he tells us, isn't he? He said, keep your focus on Jesus, who for the glory that was set before him endured the cross. Jesus never lost sight of what was in front of him. That's what enabled him to endure the cross. That's what that passage says, I think. He says, you keep your eyes on Jesus. We understand the importance of that, don't we? Remember Peter getting out of a boat? You know, we talk about all Peter's lack of faith. I asked the class I was teaching recently, I said, how many of us would have even gotten out of the boat? I mean, the storm is rocking and rolling, the seas are tossing about, and the wind is blowing, and Jesus says, come on out. The other disciples didn't get out. They all stayed in the boat. He had at least enough faith to get out of the boat, but he sunk when? It says he saw the wind and the waves, and that's when he sunk. He's no longer looking at Jesus. He glanced over here, and it's like, whoa, those are bad conditions. That happens to us. Take your eyes off of Jesus, you'll lose sight of what you're supposed to be as a Christian. Take your eyes off of your spouse, you'll lose what you're supposed to be as a spouse. Pursue them. Keep them in the line of focus at all times. Remember Solomon saying, look, give every bit of your might to whatever you choose to do. You're going to be married? He says, absolutely dedicate yourself to being the best husband you can possibly be, the best wife you can possibly be. And you remember what his advice is? Why that is the case? He says, because I'm telling you, you're going to die, and you can't do that once you're dead. Now, I mean, I understand that's a sobering, morbid thought process that Solomon uses, but he does help us understand. You only get the time you've got here. And I don't know about you, that scares me to death that I think of the time I've wasted. You ever think of the time you've wasted? What about in marriage? Am I dedicating myself to giving my wife everything that I possibly can, pursuing her? That's what to have and to hold means. Because when the relationship seems secure, what happens? People start to grow lax in their behavior, don't they? Back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, God's speaking to his people, and he's warning them. He says, You're about to go into a situation that is just incredible. Nice homes, beautiful, productive land. Things are going to be so good in the promised land. But what's he warning them about? He says, you're going to get satisfied. And he says, don't forget the Lord your God. Why would he say that? Because that is a real danger. I would tell you, our affluence in this country, our having everything at our fingertips in this country, does very little to help draw us into God. But it can make it very easy to walk away. When we are satisfied, we grow less dependent. He's saying, you're going to get there and you're going to have these wonderful homes and you're going to forget that it was God that did it. I remember the day I stood in a building similar to this, down at the lower level. And the doors opened up in the back. And Judy and her father started to walk down the aisle. Can you visualize that? However that happened in your marriage, can you visualize the day that happened? I can visualize Judy and JD walking down that aisle. And her clenching his arm. My first thought was, I don't think she's going to let go. She's not coming. You know, that it wasn't that. She was just nervous. But as I watched, but I remember the joy that I felt. Do you remember being there? God says in Isaiah, he says, God rejoices over his people like a bridegroom rejoices over his bride. Can you remember that day? I'm telling you, that was an exciting day for me. I remember seeing her come, and she was absolutely gorgeous. Everything that I had hoped for is coming true as far as a relationship and a marriage. All of that is just being fulfilled in one moment in time virtually, and I'm thinking, this is incredible. He said, that's how God feels about his people. He rejoices like that. But I remember the joy I had. Shouldn't it stay that way? That only happens by pursuit. If I just let that relationship go, if I get too comfortable with my relationship with God, my relationship with my spouse, I cease to work. And it's, he wants me to understand, it isn't going to be chemistry, Mark, that makes this marriage. It's going to be how hard am I willing to work. And if I ever take her for granted, then I'm letting that slip. He says, pursue her every day. Every day, look at her and think, she is the most beautiful woman that I have ever known. I am so thankful to the Lord. Thank God every single day that he gave you your spouse. Do the two of you pray that kind of thing together? Do you think in terms of, I'm in constant pursuit of my spouse? Exercise is the key. My marriage will never stay in that shape unless I exercise my marriage every day. He said, that's what we need to do. Are you pursuing your spouse? Lawfully wedded to have and to hold. Pursuing her with everything that you have. He would have us to understand that. Don't give up. Don't grow weary. Don't let that fall by the wayside. Sacrifice and submit in pursuit. Both of those are dealing with a willing action on the part of one or the other. That's why he doesn't say, husbands, subject your wives. He says, wives, submit. Why? Because that's a voluntary action. That is a yielding of oneself to somebody else. That is you making a choice. And that's an ongoing. That's not a one time. He's saying, wives, submit. Yield yourself. Think about how you can yield and pursue your husband by yielding to him and respecting him every day of your marriage. Husbands, how can you sacrifice every day of your marriage so that you can show your wife that you are in pursuit of her? He says, that's what our marriages are all about. Four different ways that we do that. Spiritually. Spiritually pursue your spouse. Do everything you can for your spouse to help them become the husband or wife that they're supposed to be. To help their relationship build with God. Why is it critical that husbands and wives are reading scripture together and praying together and studying God's word together and worshiping together? Because that's a pursuit of their spiritual life. Because that has to be right first for the rest of it to work the way that God wants it to work. Secondly, emotionally. That means real face-to-face time. Spending time with one another. We come home and... You ever come home from work exhausted? You just don't want to do anything? See, that's when we stop pursuing. He says, get up off of the chair. Get up off of the couch. Turn off your iPhone. Turn off the iPad. Turn off the TV. Pursue your spouse. She's more important than anything else to you. If you're speaking to the husbands, he's more important than any other earthly relationship to you wives. Get in each other's faces. Make sure you brush first, but get in each other's faces. Get close to one another, emotionally, face-to-face, connect with each other. Physically, you would think you would never have to tell people that, but I'm telling you, that falls by the wayside, and it's number one or two, almost across the board, every time there's a survey taken regarding the idea of conflict in marriage. Something that starts out absolutely and totally natural once kids become involved and other issues become involved, and there are things as we grow in that comfort level, we stop pursuing each other physically. We need to do that, both men and women. You would think that that was absolutely natural, but it's so easy for husbands and wives to resort to becoming roommates. And yet God says there's a reason even for the physical intimacy in marriage. Go back and read Song of Solomon sometime. There's implications across the board. I had the task of presenting a lecture this last year in Florida on the spiritual nature of sexuality. So I don't know if they just do that to be mean or what, why they give you some of the topics they do. But man, that was an enlightening lecture for me to present, but mainly because of the preparation for it. I don't know what people got out of it hearing it, but there is more to the physical relationship in marriage than sometimes we ever think about regarding the picture of God. Pursue your spouse physically. It is important to maintain that part of the relationship as well in your marriage. And then practically, whatever that means, that day by day, what can I do today to pursue her emotionally or to pursue him emotionally or spiritually or physically? How do I put that into terms of what I'm doing this very day? That's absolutely critical. And so I want to communicate that to my spouse, to let her know I'm in pursuit. Can you do that with eye contact and affection, body language, the countenance of my face? You can communicate a lot. I got up out of my chair one night and went to fix me something to drink and a little snack in the kitchen. I got it all fixed. And I asked Judy before I went up. I said, "You want anything?" "No, I'm good." Which is always scary anyway, because men's view of, "I'll just have a bite of yours," and women's view of that is two totally different things. But she says, "No, I'm good." And so I got up and I went upstairs and I fixed me a drink and I fixed me a little snack. And I was just getting ready to walk back down the stairs. Our family room was down a half a flight. She said, "I changed my mind. While you're up there, would you fix me?" And she told me something to fix. I didn't say a word. I was standing over by the pantry where I had just gotten my little snack and I went. Next thing I heard was, "You know I can see you." I thought I was out of eyesight, but I wasn't. I didn't have to say anything. There's no way I could convince, you know what, that was a caring nod, dude. I did that because I love you so much. Hey, what are we communicating? That's when I should have taken on a Chick-fil-A personality, isn't it? It'd be my pleasure. What would you like? It'd be my pleasure. I am here to serve you. That is my role as a husband. Do everything I can to fulfill her in that relationship. All of that goes together. Praising each other continually so that they know you're watching and that you care about those things. The discipline of praise and thanks helps us to focus on the things that are positive rather than negative. Be in pursuit. Communicate your faithfulness. How often do we make sure that they understand, "I love you now as much as I've ever loved you, and I will love you for the rest of my life"? I said that when I got married. Do I communicate that still? And let her know, "I am absolutely and remain absolutely faithful to you as your loving husband. That means most to me." We can be in pursuit. To have and to hold, I think, goes along with Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. To be in pursuit of your spouse. He says, "Leave the one and hold fast to the other." Whatever it takes, that this relationship never grows distant but only grows closer is what I need to do. We hope that you can do that. I would tell you, there's nothing more important than pursuit of Jesus Christ. Is there? That's what we need to be pursuing every day. Maybe you've never started a relationship with Him. Start that relationship. I'm telling you, that's just the beginning too. Baptism is a birth. It's not an end to anything except your old life. It's a birth process. So we choose to be born again so that we can live an entire life dedicated to God, pursuing God and His righteousness. If you've never done that, we hope that you'd take care of that today. That you would make your life right. Oops, and I jumped that up to your song. So whoever, sorry. Hopefully I'm on the right part of the song at least. Maybe you don't even understand what God asks of you. Ask us. Maybe you don't understand why He would talk about a new birth process and being baptized based on your belief and your confession, your choice to leave your life and follow Him. We'd love to show you from His Word. That's not what we're asking. God extends that invitation, and God's the one who asks us to do these things. Maybe we can help you do that today. For those of us that are Christians, may we think in terms of, he never intended it to be a relaxation. Pursue God, pursue your spouse. If you'll be active in both of those pursuits, I think God says you'll understand relationships will flourish and you will benefit greatly and the glory of God will be seen. And that's what we strive for. If we can help you respond, let us know while we stand and while we sing.